You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us. Listen to Latin Waves. I'm your host, Sylvia Richardson, joined by my guest, Jorge Martí. He is the Secretariat of GENSA Venezuela. Welcome to our program, Jorge.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be with you again.
President Maduro, after having won the election, is now facing the possibility of a coup. How would you describe the situation in Venezuela right now?
The situation in Venezuela is now very serious. President Maduro was inaugurated on the 10th of January. He had won the election on the 20th of May last year. But then immediately before he was inaugurated, there was a statement by the Group of Lima. This is a number of countries in Latin America who got together because they opposed the Venezuelan government. And they issued a statement saying that they will not recognize Maduro as the new president. The only country that issued a particular vote and didn't sign the statement was Mexico, which now has a left-wing progressive government. And then immediately, obviously, both the European Union and the United States, they piled up pressure to say basically that Maduro is a usurper, dictator, and that he's not the legitimate president. And then on the same day and the day after, the National Assembly had a meeting. The National Assembly is dominated by the opposition. And they said that they didn't recognize Maduro as president and that there was a vacuum of power, therefore, because the president was illegitimate, and that they were prepared to take over by the president of the National Assembly becoming the president of the country. And they were calling on the international community, in inverted commas, and the army to intervene and recognize the president of the National Assembly as the legitimate president of Venezuela. And then immediately the U.S. State Department issued another statement saying that they recognize the courage of the National Assembly and that the only legitimate institution in the country was the National Assembly. And they said, I quote, that it is now time to start the transition towards a new government in Venezuela. So we can see that all the pieces are coming together for what in reality is an attempt at coup. They refuse to recognize the legitimately democratically elected government of Venezuela and President Maduro, and they're basically calling on the army to intervene to remove him. And this is completely scandalous. It's really not the business of the U.S. government to tell the Venezuelan people who the government is or not. It's for the Venezuelan people to decide freely. And obviously, I think that this time they're quite serious about moving in this direction. When the United States talks about regime change and about a new government, a transition towards a new government and so on, is that they're basically piling up all they have, all the pressure that they can exert in order to remove the government of Maduro. So therefore, it's a very serious situation. And this coming week, this is going to escalate because on the 23rd of January, which is the anniversary of the overthrow of the dictatorship in 1958, the opposition has called for demonstrations, street protests, in order to push for the removal of Maduro as president.
It's interesting to witness this event. Almost as surreal, right? If that were to happen in North America, where an unpopular president like Donald Trump was, you know, not recognized by the House, lost the House, were suddenly to be told you're no longer legitimate president, there would be outrage. But somehow this has been legitimized throughout Latin America. There's a history of U.S. intervention, more than 100 U.S. interventions over the last 100 years. So it's not surprising to us. Can we talk a little bit about the example that Venezuela represents for the world in terms of the social changes they have been trying to enact in the last 20 years?
Yes, but first of all, let me go back to the point that you were making at the beginning. As you say, it's completely a scandal. Just imagine for a second that the Venezuelan government was to say that they don't recognize Donald Trump as the president of the U.S. because he has not really won the election. And they decided to recognize only Hillary Clinton as the president, or let's say they decided to recognize Bernie Sanders as the president because they like him more. That will be a complete outrage. And obviously, the difference is that Venezuela will have no means to implement this policy. But the United States has means to implement policy in Latin America, and particularly in Venezuela. For instance, they're now threatening with an oil embargo. But yes, as to the second part of your question, yes, the reason why the United States is so adamant to remove the democratically elected government of Venezuela, and they've been trying for many years. Let's remember that the first time that they carried out a coup in Venezuela, organized by the United States Embassy, was in 2002. So that's more than 15 years ago. They already tried to remove the president, who at that time was President Chavez. And the reason is because in Venezuela there is a revolutionary process going on. There is a revolution. And this revolution has achieved a lot for the people of Venezuela in terms of housing. They have built and delivered 2.5 million houses for those in need. They have introduced universal health care. They have introduced universal education all the way to university. And yes, it is true that for the last 4 or 5 years of economic crisis, a very deep economic crisis that Venezuela is going through, some of these achievements and conquests of the revolution have been undermined. But still, the United States want to remove this government because it's a thorn on their side for their policies in Latin America. It's an example of an independent foreign policy. And basically, also, they want to put the hands on Venezuelan oil and other natural resources directly without any intermediaries. And they see this government as an obstacle towards that. And that is the real reason. It's got nothing to do with the democratic legitimacy, with concern for humanitarian crisis, which they've been using as an excuse. It's got nothing to do with democracy. As any other U.S. foreign intervention, it has to do with the interests of the big multinationals and the big U.S. corporations, and basically with U.S. imperialism. The interests of U.S. imperialism are best served by having a compliant government in Caracas, and that's what they want to achieve with these moves.
Also, I think it's important for people to remember the history of coup and the way the U.S. imposed their own rule over Latin America. Let's talk a little bit about the recent history of Honduras. If democracy was the intent here, if democratic rule and the saving of lives and protection of civil rights were the case, then, you know, the focus would be on a government such as the one of Honduras that was, you know, imposed by a military coup.
Yes, a military coup which had the direct participation of Hillary Clinton at the time in 2009. There was a military coup against Manuel Zelaya, the then president, just because he dared to introduce a mild agrarian reform. And so the army, in collaboration with the United States, carried out a military coup. Let's remember that this is a country with a U.S. military base and heavy influence of the United States. And then after this coup, there were eventually elections, two sets of illegitimate elections that took place under electoral fraud. And one of them was just 1 year ago. And even the Organization of American States, which is aligned with the U.S. policy in the region, said that these elections in Honduras 1 year ago were illegitimate. Many instances of electoral fraud. But obviously, the government in Honduras is compliant with the foreign policy of the Trump administration and in general with the foreign policy of Washington. So there's no concern, in inverted commas, for human rights. There's no concern for a humanitarian crisis. There's no concern for democracy, nothing like that. The focus is put on Venezuela because Venezuela is not compliant with the U.S. Foreign policy. We could give many other examples like this. In Colombia, we have a very serious situation of human rights abuses. In Colombia, it's now barely 3 weeks into this new year, 2019. And already more than 15 human rights and trade union activists have been killed because of their political and trade union activities in Colombia. But you don't hear about that in the news. There's no concern expressed from Washington. and there's no threat that the government should be removed, issued from the United States. So we can see clearly a policy of double standards and a policy which basically undermines any of the excuses or attempts to legitimize their policy towards Venezuela falls on this criteria, the criteria of double standards that they apply to different governments in the region. And it all depends on whether these governments follow or comply with the U.S. foreign policy or not. It's as simple as that.
I feel that it's also important to address the underlying pinning of this, and that is economic governance. So who owns the lands of Latin America? Do the people of Latin America have a right to govern themselves, or must we forever be destined to be the backyard of the U.S. as they have defined us in the past? And in the case of Venezuela, what started under Hugo Chavez was a beautiful revolution, one that intended not only to transform, you know, the way the society is run, but also in whose service does government serve. Example, that good example of a government that nationalizes their resources, that puts these resources at the service of its people, not mere, you know, a few interests, is not an example that once the U.S. will be interested in, you know, perpetuating. And we look at that, you know, we think simply of the kind of economic crisis that we now face globally, this cyclical crisis that capitalism has continuously recreated. And that in the case of Venezuela, they were one of the few countries that was able to not only weather the storm because the oil prices were still reasonable, but now as the oil prices have dropped, Venezuela has also faced some challenges. Being in process of, you know, co-creating a new way of being as a society, at the same time being faced by constant aggression, economic, political, military, you know, which is not a real threat.
Yes, first of all, Venezuela and the President Chavez attempted to use the oil wealth of the country, which is a lot. I mean, Venezuela has the largest proven oil reserves anywhere in the world, even larger than Saudi Arabia. So they tried to use this oil wealth for the benefit of the majority, which has never been done before in Venezuela or in many other countries for that matter. So at the time when, for instance, in Western Europe, we had policies of austerity, of privatization of the National Health Service, of privatization of education, increasing tuition fees, and so on, what we had in Venezuela was precisely the opposite. While in Spain, hundreds of thousands were being evicted from their homes because they couldn't pay their mortgages, in Venezuela, the government was building homes for those who couldn't afford them. While in Britain, you had a massive increase in tuition fees for university students. In Venezuela, you had a massive expansion of university education free of charge for everyone who wanted to access. And so on and so forth. So this was a policy that ran contrary to the whole policies implemented by all the capitalist countries, including in advanced capitalist countries. But this was at the time, as you say, when oil prices were very high and they reached about $100 a barrel. However, we have to say, though, that these policies started when oil prices were much lower. In 1998, when Chavez won the election for the first time, oil prices were maybe a third of that peak of 100 that they reached a few years later. But it's true that by 2014-15, there was a further collapse in the prices of raw materials and sources of energy at an international level, mainly because of the slowdown of the economy in China. And this had a big impact on Venezuela because overnight, almost in the space of a year, oil prices went from over $100 a barrel to $27. And this was almost the cost of producing oil in Venezuela. So this really hit the Venezuelan economy very hard. To this, we have to add the impact of economic sanctions. Under the Trump administration, about a year ago or more, we had the introduction of sanctions which prevent a number of things. For instance, they prevent the Venezuelan government from renegotiating its foreign debt. They prevent companies based in the United States from entering into any agreements with government bodies or government companies, government-owned companies in Venezuela. And this includes, obviously, the oil company PDVSA. And this has had a big impact on the economy. It prevents the government from delaying payments on its foreign debt or renegotiating, rescheduling its foreign debt at a time when it should be using foreign reserves to purchase food and other basic items, including drugs and medication. Prevents the Venezuelan government from freely trading in the world market. For instance, there's a large amount of money that's been seized by a company in Europe, which is called Euroclear, which deals with banking, international banking transactions, which the Venezuelan government was intending to use in order to buy medication, and now it's been frozen. It's about €1,000 million. Then, for instance, in the British government is now withholding gold that the Venezuelan central bank had deposited in the Bank of England, and they now want to repatriate it to Venezuela. And this gold belongs to Venezuela, but the Bank of England is refusing to release this oil to the Venezuelan people. So these sanctions go to aggravate the economic crisis. Perhaps they're not the cause of the crisis itself, but they go to a great extent to aggravate and make it much more difficult, which also means that all this talk about the humanitarian crisis is very hypocritical, because withholding money from the government in Venezuela, making it more difficult for the Venezuelan government to purchase food and medication, is only making any humanitarian crisis in Venezuela much worse. But finally, we should also say that in my opinion, one of the main causes of the crisis in Venezuela, the economic crisis that we're seeing now, is the fact that the Venezuelan government attempted to regulate the economy, to introduce price controls, to introduce foreign exchange controls, but it never went all the way. It never went to the point where you take over democratic control over the main pillars of the economy, the commanding heights of the economy, the land, the banking, and the production, the means of production, and you put them under democratic control of the workers for the benefit of the majority. So while these controls disrupted the normal functioning of a privately owned capitalist economy, it didn't replace it by a democratically planned common ownership economy. So this created a lot of dislocation, because obviously many private capitalists in Venezuela, they refuse to invest. They say, look, my investments are not safe because there's a revolution. We don't know whether tomorrow the workers are going to occupy the factory and the government is going to expropriate it. And from their own point of view, they are right. I mean, if I was a capitalist, I wouldn't necessarily invest in Venezuela. But that's not the point. The point is what comes first, the interests of a handful of private capitalists who are only out to make private profit, or the interest of the majority of people of Venezuela, who are now facing a very difficult economic situation. So I will say the combination of all these factors: one, that the revolution never went all the way; two, the collapse in the price of oil in the world markets; and three, the impact of economic sanctions and other measures by the United States, has combined to create a really frightful economic crisis. It is calculated in the last 5 years, Venezuelan GDP has gone down by over 50%. And this in turn has pushed many people in Venezuela, hundreds of thousands perhaps, to migrate to other countries looking for a way to survive. So in the middle of all this economic crisis, the policy of the United States is to increase the pressure on the Venezuelan economy, to strangulate the Venezuelan economy in order to force a section of the army to remove the democratically elected president. And this is a complete scandal. If this was being done to any other government, there will be an uproar. I mean, in the United States, there is a lot of discussion, for instance, about the Russian meddling into the US elections, about China manipulating prices against the United States, But the United States is doing exactly what they accuse others of doing. They are actually doing it in for real, in reality, and there's plenty of proof of that in Venezuela in order to remove a government that they don't like.
The truth is that in the last 20 years, Venezuela has held 25 elections. They have held more elections than any other government in Latin America. And the government has won with overwhelming, amazing majorities. You know, some that would put to shame many governments, including Canada.
Yes. I mean, if you look at the concrete facts and figures, since 1998, when Chavez was elected for the first time in a democratic election, where he got an overwhelming support, there have been, as you say, 25 elections, national elections, regional elections, presidential elections, referendums, you name it, they've had it. And the government, i.e. the Bolivarian Revolution, has won 23 out of these 25. They've only lost 20. They only lost two elections since 1998. So they've lost a referendum, a constitutional reform referendum, and then they lost the 2015 National Assembly elections. These are the only two elections they have ever lost. In fact, the elections they contest, the legitimacy of the elections that Maduro won in May last year, it's worth going into the details because, first of all, this election took place because the opposition were demanding early presidential elections. These elections were not due. They had not been scheduled, but because of pressure from the opposition and a negotiating table that existed in the Dominican Republic between the opposition and the government, the government agreed to bring the elections forward. So it was at the request of the opposition. Then when the elections were called, a section of the opposition decided to boycott. But another section of the opposition decided to participate. So they thought these elections were fair and free and legitimate, and they decided to participate. They had two candidates. One candidate was Henry Falcón, the governor of the state of Lara, who is the leader of the opposition, and he decided to participate. And then he lost the election. The elections took place in the context of high level of abstention. But as you say, in percentage of the total census of possible voters, Maduro got more percentage than Trump got when he won the election in the United States. So just for comparison, if you want to talk about legitimacy, probably you could say that Maduro is more legitimate as a president, elected president, than Trump is. I mean, after all, Trump didn't even win the popular vote. He only won because of the electoral college system, which is completely undemocratic. So yes, and you can make the same comparison with all the elected presidents around Latin America who are now all up in arms against President Maduro in Venezuela, for instance, Bolsonaro in Brazil, Macri in Argentina, Piñera in Chile, and Duque in Colombia. They all got a lower percentage of the total electorate than Maduro got in his election in May last year.
How do people respond to this overt acts of terror against the people of Venezuela?
Well, I will say that we need to respond with a massive movement against this imperialist intervention. It doesn't really matter what you think about the government of Maduro. This is not about whether you agree with Maduro and his policies. I am personally very critical of these policies, which I think do not serve to advance the cause of the revolution. They're mainly based on the idea that you can have a conciliation between the workers and the capitalists, and they don't go far enough in advancing the interests of working people and the peasants in Venezuela. As I said, I'm very critical of Maduro's policies. And last year, had I been Venezuelan, I would have probably not voted for him. But this is not what this is about. What this is about now is the fact that a foreign government, or a number of foreign governments, because this is an operation, this military coup that they want to implement in Venezuela, has been organized by Trump, by Bolsonaro in Brazil, by Macri, and by Almagro, the General Secretary of the Organization of American States. They want, who have no democratic credentials, any of them, they want to implement regime change in Venezuela. And this is completely scandalous. From a purely democratic point of view, the people of Venezuela have the right to decide who's their president, free from any outside interference. So I'd say, just from a purely democratic point of view, never mind if you are progressive or if you are a socialist, the case is even stronger. We should organize a worldwide movement to protest against this scandalous, unjustified imperialist intervention in Venezuela. Because if we don't, this is a coup that's taking place, that they want a coup to take place, and they've already started all the procedures for regime change. And it just they're just piling up the pressure from the international community, pressure in the form of sanctions, pressure in the form of demonstrations in the streets, to push a section of the army to move against the democratically elected government. And this is completely scandalous. We must protest energetically and strongly against this policy.
I want to not only thank you for the work that you do, but also, invite our audience to learn more, to educate, and to take active action, as you point out. As the president of Mexico has demonstrated, despite the push to be with the wave, he actually has expressed support for Venezuela. And I think that many of us sometimes feel isolated, right? The news are overwhelmingly against the government of Venezuela, because the interests they serve would benefit from the collapse of the Venezuelan government. But we must all be individually informed and take a stance that not only allows to progress a society that has justice, but also to move the needle on this, practice of military coup, of economic coups, of imperialism that continue today well into the 21st century.
Yes, that's correct. And in the case of Canada, I will say the following. The Canadian administration is heavily involved and has been heavily involved now for a few years in all the attempts to remove the government in Venezuela. It's playing a completely scandalous role. But you need to ask yourself the following question. The same government in Canada, which is ruled that postal workers have no right to continue their strike, is the same government that says that they want democracy in Venezuela. What kind of democracy is this when workers have no rights to take collective action in order to defend their interests? So yes, I would call on people to question the official version that they get from the government and from the capitalist media, and inform themselves directly about what is really going on. Question what are the motivations of the Canadian government or the U.S. government, the Brazilian government, to intervene in Venezuela, and find out what the real reasons are. I will ask people or recommend people to use our website, the handsofvenezuela.org website. I'm also on the editorial board of a Marxist website. It's called marxist.com. And I will ask people also to check what we have to say. You don't have to agree, you don't have to take our word for it, but you can read the material and then think for yourself whether what we're saying makes sense, whether what we're saying coincides with your experience and with past record of these governments, and then make up your mind.
Thank you again for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Take care. That was Jorge Martí. He's the Secretariat of Hands Off Venezuela. We reached him in London.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com.